But the guaranteed loans, man, I can't think of a better public-private partnership, right? Allows us to back those loans that you guys are making, maybe give that producer a little bit more favorable terms, make it a little bit more affordable to get them, whether it's going or keep them in business or help them through whatever situation they've got going on. It's just a really nice compliment.
Ladies and gentlemen, farmers, ranchers, and distinguished guests, thank you for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast, where we discuss the latest ideas, methods, trends, and techniques available to help your farm achieve higher levels of farm profitability. The Farm for Profit podcast is co-hosted by Tanner Winterhoff, the Iowa Bankerman, and David Whitaker, the Iowa Land Guy, where in tandem, they will share their ideas and advice from industry experts. Thank you again for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast. Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long. And now, here's Tanner and David.
All right. Welcome back to another Farm for Profit episode. This is Tanner Winterhoff.
And this is David Whitaker.
Dave, we got a little advice from a couple of peers as we put this podcast together that it would be helpful if we identified ourselves at the beginning of each episode. So for a new listener, I'm Tanner. This is the voice of Tanner, and I'm a banker in Central Iowa.
And I'm David, and I am a farmland sales auctioneer and real estate agent in Central Iowa as well.
So thank you, new listeners, for joining us. We really appreciate you checking in. We've got a little bit of an interesting time this year. We started out with the coronavirus. We had some weather events. We've got inland hurricanes. We've got regular hurricanes. We've got droughts. Everything's all storming together. But we're going to focus on something a little bit more exciting today. We're going to jump right into what's working in ag. Don't you think, Dave?
I think so. We just call it hashtag 2020.
That's all we got.
That's what we'll call it. We have a guest today. Who is our guest, Tanner?
Yeah, we've got Dan Freeberg. Dan is the president of Premier Crop Systems. And he is here to share with us a little bit about what's working for ag in his company. A really neat background. He grew up on a farm in Iowa, graduated from Iowa State University. His career includes wholesale fertilizer sales, retail management. He's also served as the CEO of the Iowa Fertilizer and Chemical Association, later the Agribusiness Association of Iowa, and other business consulting. One of his favorite beverages, if not the favorite beverage of Dan, can you believe this, is Diet Pepsi.
There you go.
But what does this have to do with farming? What do you think?
I tell you, it has a lot to do with farming. So Dan, tell us, I'm glad to see you're an Iowa State grad. I'm glad to see you're from Iowa. Anything we missed there other than Good Hair Day and the Diet Pepsi thing?
I think you got it nailed.
Okay, great. Well, welcome, Dan. And do you live currently in Iowa still?
Yep, just south of Des Moines.
I got you. And so with your, tell me a little bit about your company. What exactly do you do?
Yeah, we take data, agronomic data, help growers with agronomic data that they're collecting, try to provide analytics, and then that analytics turns into advice and an action plan for the following year. Most of what we do ends up with a variable rate prescription that goes in a piece of equipment, whether it's the grower's equipment or could be a retailer's equipment.
So you're basically working with the data, and data is the currency of the internet, is what I always tell Tanner. And you are taking that data, and then you are helping the farmer probably spend less money by doing variable rate throughout the field, or making tough decisions to plant or not plant or certain things, what I'm gathering. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't think we ever save growers money. So probably, I think that's one of the mistakes that a lot of people made in precision ag in the early years. You know, so we're 20 some years into this, and a lot of the early messaging was around saving growers money. And I think that's an unfulfilled promise. In the case of variable rate lime, it is something that we do. I mean, that saves the grower money on liming costs. But most of the time, I think what we do is we, rather than positioning it as saving the grower money, it's about investing within parts of fields to get a higher return. So instead of treating the whole field as though it's the same, it's about identifying areas that are capable of producing more and more efficiently. And then other areas, it could be that's where you save them money because it just doesn't make sense to continue to invest.
I grabbed it right off the website. that Premier Crop was established in 1999. And what it says right there is this: they enable the growers to think deeper about their data. So what I grabbed from that is using that variable rate technology, the way to make that pay is not necessarily saving money, but maybe reallocating those input dollars to site-specific areas to where you could probably get a better return on your investment than where they might have just been blanketly broadcasted.
Yep, I think that's exactly right. I think maybe the other thing that we do differently is we have the ability to combine agronomics and economics. So right now it's really difficult to make money in a lot of areas, and so if we're able to if we're spending more in one part of the field, we're able to actually tie the cost, the added cost that we're investing in that part of the field to the analysis. So at the end of the year, we're able to really deliver what we're branding as a yield efficiency score, which is just dollar per acre return to land and management. So it's, for us, it's about what's been missing that we think is there's too much focus on just agronomics and not economics. And I think right now, especially growers, they appreciate the focus on economics. So we like to say everything agronomic is economic.
Gotcha. So that's a new term for me, the yield efficiency score that you have. Tell me a little bit more. Is it 100 is the best and zero is the worst? Or how does your scoring system work?
No, it's just it's really just dollar per acre return to land and management.
Okay.
So if you think – so it's yield, and yield's tracked obviously with the yield monitor, a calibrated yield monitor. So it's yield at a benchmark selling price that the grower gets to set, minus what they spent on nutrients, seed, crop protection, and field operations. So it's kind of what's left over. When a grower sees a yield efficiency score of $400 and they know they got $275 in land costs, then they immediately understand what's left, returned to them for management.
So if we've got a listener here who hasn't been using variable rate technology, before as part of their operation, is that a large hurdle to overcome, or do they pretty much have the technology on most of these farms to be able to implement that?
Tanner, I think if $7 corn did anything for us, it was that there was a lot of investment in new technology in the cab. So when we had that run up in prices and in profitability, growers put a lot into, they invested heavily in upgrading planters, but in the process of what happened during that time period, there's a lot of technology in the cab, but there's a lot of growers who aren't necessarily using it to the full advantage. So they have the technology, they have the ability to do it. They haven't started because they don't know how, and they're looking for solutions.
So is there any certain kind of, you said $7 corn, a lot of people updated their equipment there, but for our newbie farmer that's out there, or even somebody that's been doing it and they're in an older combine, whatever it may be, and they decide they want to upgrade and be able to use your systems, is there a minimum like entry something that they're going to need for equipment?
Yeah. So for us, we use the yield monitor as a way of measuring, measuring whether what we did was the right thing.
They have to have a WAS GPS or a certain sub inch or anything there?
No, just a GPS, a yield monitor with a GPS receiver.
Okay. Fair enough.
So pretty simple to get in there. So Premier Crop Systems really allows that farmer to really get the investment that they put into that technology and put it to work. You guys can really work with them to use the existing equipment that they have to their full potential. One of the other things that I had come across when I was reading is it really keeps that farmer from farming on averages. You really come down and do check blocks and break that field out into, I call them profit zones, but maybe you have a different term. Could you explain what you do when you break a farm down?
Yeah, a lot of times that is what we do is we try to identify, whether it's, management zones where we're bringing new version of that, which is performance zones, but it's really trying to identify like agronomic environments or unique agronomic environments within fields. And so it's very much that uh, not 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 treating it all like it's the same. So within every, Tanner, within every field, there's growers will tell you there's a sweet spot.
Yeah.
You know, every grower who's had a yield monitor has seen 80, 90 bushel beans. You know, that's, they've seen greater than 100 bushel beans, and they just wish they could figure out what it was about that spot that made it so great. And that's kind of what we try to help them do, is identify those really high yielding sweet spots. And a lot of times those are the ones that will respond the most to additional input investment. And then conversely, there's areas that just, you know, don't yield as consistently. And we try to solve the problem of whatever it is. We try to use data to help coach them on whatever those areas are. You're in Huxley, and there's a lot of potholes, you know, I mean, there's that north central Iowa area. There's low areas, and in wet years, they drown out, and dry years are the highest yielding. They tend to be organic matter rich and nutrient rich because of all the years that they didn't produce a crop. So they'll do great. They'll do great in a dry year. But a lot of times we don't invest near as much in inputs in those areas.
Yeah, take advantage of the resources that we have there. Well, Dan, I really thank you for joining us. I'm going to summarize real quick and then let me know if we missed anything or if you want to share anything else. But we've got Dan Freeberg with Premier Crop Systems on the phone today, helping us out with our What's Working in Ag segment. The company started in 1999 and enables growers to think deeper and utilize their data to make better agronomic decisions from that detailed data itself. They put the technology investments that you've already got on your farm to work for you. They want to make sure that you don't think about farming on the average, get down to a profit zone by profit zone analyst and management style. And then make sure that if you have a farm that is set up to where variable rate can pay, that it is not necessarily, Dave, the concept of saving you money. It's more allocating those resources into a better part of the field that might make you more on the profit side. How did I do, Dan?
You did perfect.
Well, if there's anything else you want to share, let us know. Otherwise, make sure our listeners know how to get a hold of you and Premier Crop Systems if they want to learn more.
The website, probably just premiercrop.com, would be a great place to get started.
Okay, fantastic. Well, there you go, listener. That was our What's Working in Ag segment for today. We're excited to move on to our main topic. That was another great What's Working in Ag segment, David. Now I'm excited to kind of put an educational episode together for our listeners. We focus every time we put these episodes together on ways for your farms to achieve higher levels of profitability. And this is going to still tie into that major topic, but we know that every farmer needs to get started some way, and they also need to know what resources are at their disposal. So super excited today to have Amanda DeYoung with the state's FSA office on the phone. She grew up on a farm in eastern Iowa that has been in her family for over 150 years and served as the senior policy advisor for the Iowa Corn Growers Association prior to this role. Also filled roles with Senator Charles Grassley's office and the USDA prior to November of 2018 being appointed by the Trump administration the state executive director for the USDA Iowa Farm Service Agency. So thanks for joining us, Amanda.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
And Amanda, just give our listeners a little insight. Do you farm as well, or family farm, or what's the background other than what you've done with the U.S. government?
Yeah, well, probably equally as important as my day job. My husband and I also farm. We actually farm in Southwest Marshall County. My husband linked up with a friend, and we're in a non-family operation. We raise cattle. We raise corn, hay, do some custom work, and some kids.
Cool. Well, we want to explore if the FSA office, you know, one of our listeners kind of inquired, mentioned that the FSA office helped them get started farming, but we want to inquire farther if the USDA Farm Service Agency has resources available to impact a farmer's operation, and want to kind of dive into that. I was trying to figure out, why was the FSA office this branch of the government even started?
So, you know, if you look back in the history books, the Farm Service Agency can date back to 1933. Now, we weren't called the Farm Service Agency back then. But in the depths of the Great Depression, FDR's New Deal had plans for agriculture. And the agency's original mission, a lot of people don't know this, kind of interesting, and honestly, I didn't know it till I started here. They were relocating entire farm communities, really after sort of Dust Bowl times, to relocate those farm communities to areas of the country that they believed would be more profitable for farming. Just imagine trying to do something like that today. Huh. We've had a few name changes along the way, a few mergers, a few reorganizations. A lot of people remember still today refer to us as the ASCS office or Farmers Home if they were a lending customer. But throughout those changes, I think we have created an agency that is very focused and has a single mission of serving American farmers. We do that in through a variety of programs, a variety of ways, but really we are able in a voluntary sense, right? I mean, everything we do is voluntary,
right?
Help provide a financial safety net, for producers who need them. And you hope sometimes that you don't need the FSA, right?
Right.
Certainly some of our services are not the things that a producer is hoping to have to rely on, but if they do, we are there.
Interesting. So as I've gone through my farming career, in and about, I've heard FSA, USDA, I've heard the different names that you're referring to. And when I do, I think of programs and, payments, money, and then every one of my buddies says, oh, you're just opening your mailbox and you're going to get a check in the mail from the government. So with that being said, let's take a broader look at it. What types of services does FSA provide? Do they give loans? Do they just do CRP payments? Like what is a CSP pay? Everything. Give me kind of a broad.
Before you jump into that, Amanda, I want to make sure that we're using the correct acronym. Should we be saying FSA or should we be using USDA?
So USDA is the is our department, right?
Okay.
There's many agencies within USDA, probably the ones that your listeners are going to be most familiar with are us, the Farm Service Agency, and probably also NRCS, the Natural Resources Conservation Service.
Okay.
We are co-located. All of our service centers are co-located in Iowa. So if you come into one, the other one is usually across the desk or the door is, right across the hall. But we also, at USDA, we've got Risk Management Agency. That's the agency that oversees crop insurance companies,
yep,
and the administration of federal crop. But everything from food and nutrition service, food safety inspection service, those are the people in the meat plants. It's a wide variety. But what we do here, we're the Farm Service Agency, and you can call us FSA. That's just fine.
Okay, so what's the FSA do? Oh, sorry.
If you call them, it's option two on the phone.
Option
gets you the FSA every time, I can tell you that. All right, I digress.
No, so what can the FSA help us out with?
Sure. So all of our programs, first and foremost, are legislated by Congress. Congress appropriates money to USDA traditionally through farm bills, sometimes through ad hoc disaster bills, and I think we'll probably get into that, talk a little bit about some of those things most recently that have come through ad hoc disaster bills. But Congress kind of sets the rules, right? They set the playbook and they appropriate the money. Then USDA, we interpret that legislation, we set the regulatory framework and the policies to implement that. But the big box programs really are outlined by Congress. We've got, as you mentioned, farm loans. We have a very large, we might not always be well known for it, but we have a very large loan portfolio. And we've got all sorts of different loans that can work depending on your individual situation. We also, probably what we're best known for, are, I call them our price and commodity support programs. Those are the sometimes annual, although throughout history, those programs have changed from maybe annual payments to market-based programs. But our traditional farm commodity supports, from everything from dairy to row crops. We obviously have conservation programs, conservation reserve programs, CRP. I think almost everybody probably is familiar with that, whether you're a farmer or just a landowner, or just live in a rural community. But we do have some smaller offshoots of CRP that people aren't always familiar with, and we have some conservation disaster programs that people are not always familiar with. We do a lot of outreach and education, obviously, about our programs, about how they fit into sometimes how they interact with other things. We have had Congress link sometimes what we're doing with, let's say, crop insurance. If people remember back to the SURE disaster days, that was an example of that. So there are linkages sometimes from what we're doing with what other agencies are doing. And so we try to keep our customers, obviously, informed about not just what we've got going on, but how it might impact other programs that they're participating in.
I don't know how you keep it all straight. There is a ton available, it sounds like.
You know, somebody asked me, we had to do some research for a different interview, and so we asked, how many programs could FSA have going on at one time? And the answer was 50.
Holy smokes.
Even I couldn't name them all off the top of my head, probably.
That reminds me of my family was up in the cabin, and we challenged ourselves to try and, without looking at our phones, name all 99 counties in the state of Iowa. This would be one of those challenges.
We play that game too.
not to, you know, hit
all
nerd,
50 programs right, for the FSA.
Hit nerd status and know all 50 programs of the FSA office.
So with that, I've only heard of, let's say, 5-6 of those back to when it was DCP money. Now it's PLC and Arc County, CRP and some grassland stuff that you might have, MFP payment. So I've heard of a couple of the acronyms that are out there. How, as new farmers, so our whole podcast is Farm for Profit, okay, to be more profitable for our farmers, similar to your mission that is financial safety net for those who choose to use it, okay? So as our farmers are listening, they're going to choose or not choose to use the FSA program, whether they want to or not. How do they go about knowing what or learning more other than daddy told them or grandpa told them that they should use it? I'm guessing you guys have seminars or there's 50 programs. I know 5. How do we know more?
Yeah. I mean, really that's where our network of staff in our county offices, that's where the value is, right? I mean, we have certainly learned in today's strange operating environments that we're in that a lot more can be done digitally, right? But I think some of the learning and some of the outreach and some of the understanding comes from, frankly, one-on-one conversations sometimes with your office staff. So we get to know you. We get to know your operation. You tell us, oh, hey, I'm raising bees now. Well, did you know we have this program for beekeeping? So really it comes from that, I think personally, that personal relationship between our staff and our customers. And, you know, as both a customer myself, I think I can say this, but we like to refer to our producers as our farmers, right? You go into a county office and you talk to one of our employees, they'll say, these are my farmers. We have a vested interest. We live in your communities. We have a vested interest in seeing you succeed. And that personal touch, that personal relationship, that understanding of what, not only what you do, but maybe what you want to do, where you want to take your farm, goals that you have for your operation, that helps us better serve you and communicate. We know the programs, and we can help you, you know, fit and tailor what you need, for your operation.
So we've actually had previous guests refer to their FSA agent or the officer or even one of their FSA lenders as a member of their advisory team. So I think mm-hmm. that your farmers rely and value that input that you're providing just as much as you feel that you need to help contribute to their operations and provide them knowledge of what's available. So the trick that we have being the Farm for Profit podcast is we always try to focus on ways that can help farmers achieve higher levels of profitability. And I understand sure. that the FSA and the government programs are not meant to increase the farmer's profitability, but more, like you said, to protect their safety net. We're going through an unprecedented time right now in this pandemic, and I know that there's ways that you and your office can help with that. What type of disaster programs do you have available?
So I think I'd be negligent if I didn't at least mention pre-COVID, right? We had one of the largest programs we've ever pulled off at Iowa FSA, and that was the market facilitation program. That was the trade aid, as a lot of people deemed it for short. You know, that came really, you know, I mentioned earlier how how Congress gives the secretary, you know, we get legislation. It sort of lays out the rules. But Congress also gives the secretary, uniquely, I think, as if you look across some other federal agencies, uniquely gives us some borrowing authority in the Commodity Credit Corporation, or the CCC. Now, really, all of our programs are run through the CCC, but the secretary has pretty wide berth in times of emergency to tap into the CCC dollars and use them to support American agriculture. And he did, both in 2018 and 2019 with the Market Facilitation Program. Honestly, we came right out of that and rammed MFP wrapped up right at the end of 2019. And we ran headlong. I think the first reported case in the United States was in early January, first week of January with COVID, ran smack dab into the situation that we're in now. And so the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program was born. Now, that was a joint effort. Congress passed the legislation. They did not put a lot of strings attached to it. USDA came up with the programs to administer it. Obviously, they had some food purchase programs, but at least at FSA, we are in the thick of it. We are in the middle of the CFAP sign up right now. That's going to run through the 28th of August. Tremendous, tremendous interest on the first day. Many offices receiving hundreds of phone calls for almost 2 weeks straight. The phones were ringing so much and so fast, we couldn't get everyone. We couldn't even get the phones answered, let alone get applications processed really that first week. So to me, that indicated that was a very good temperature gauge, if you will, of what was going on in the farm economy and how critically important the support was to producers.
Let me interject there for just a second, Amanda. So help me understand, how does this program help farmers? Is it more livestock because it's the food assistance program, or does it help our row crop guys?
Eligibility really span kind of three categories. Livestock, and in Iowa, our payments, a higher percentage of Iowa's payments have gone to livestock. Nationwide, that isn't true, but in Iowa, the largest percentage of our payments have gone to livestock. We also have a component or a class for, we just call it non-specialty crops. So that's a lot of the old Title I commodities people remember, corn, beans, wheat. You know, list goes on as you go up into the northern, the Great Plains and North Dakota, South Dakota, some of the small grains. And then a specialty crops box. Ironically, we've had a few of those applications too. We've seen some mushrooms and some other things apply as well. So the three boxes, certainly they've been outlined. That commodity list is still under review. So additional commodities may be added and will be kind of anxiously waiting to see if the secretary does announce any additional commodities. But for row crop producers, it really came down to whether you still had grain in the bin, still own grain on January 15th. Same went for livestock. The secretary and the policy team in D.C. kind of, they took a shot in time. Obviously, when they were developing this, we didn't know what COVID would look like today, right? And what the market impacts would be in July. And we don't know what they're going to be come this fall either. But, I think, you know, they took a snapshot. They looked at a window of time, from January until May, and they developed, the programs around that time frame. But there is a component for grain farmers if they didn't have their corn sold. But for livestock producers, I would say, you know, they're not traditionally our customers, partially by their design, right? I mean, there's kind of a sentiment, or there had been a historic sentiment maybe, that we don't need USDA support. You know, we're not tied to the government. But I think that that tune has changed a little bit, certainly, in some of the discussions I've had with the livestock groups. And for the first time, we had hogs covered in MFP. They were eligible for payments under MFP. This is the first time, outside of disaster programs, that we've had a widespread, application process for cattlemen. So we're getting to know a lot of new folks. We have a lot of new customers coming in. We call them customers. Yeah. We have a lot of new customers coming in, with cattle applications under CFAP that we have not, had in the office before.
That's fantastic. And I remember the disaster programs being there pre-COVID, you know, they'll be there afterwards. It was kind of fun that you mentioned that those can help assist with those raising bees. You can livestock flooding, that type of information as all found on your website is a great way to help enforce that safety net. But one of the things, you know, I, as an ag lender, deal with the FSA most often is on your loan products and your loan guarantees and helping farmers get through them, whether it's in a beginning farmer stance or it's in a time of stress to help provide that safety net. I'm going to kind of hit a couple of these, and then I want to focus on something that might impact our farmers currently in the economic stance. But the FSA office has the ability to do direct operating. That's used to purchase livestock and feed, farm equipment, fuel, farm chemicals, so on and so forth. The operating expenses that take and get that commodity to market. There's microloans that can help with niche type requests. We've got direct farm ownership, and that is used to purchase or grow your farm or ranch. The guaranteed loans, which is the one that I want to circle back to, you know, enables private lenders such as myself to extend credit to family farms and farm owners. We have targeted loans for those that are in minorities, and then obviously emergency loans that, you know, could come into a point of time here. But let's reflect a little bit more on your opinion, Amanda, as to how potentially in this economic stance, those guaranteed loans could help a farmer continue farming or help one get started.
Yeah, it's a great public-private partnership, in my opinion, the guaranteed loan programs. One, because it allows the USDA and the taxpayer dollars to go further, right? Our direct loans cost us more money to make, and they serve a very important subset, particularly beginning farmers, who may not be quite as credit worthy as some of your borrowers might be. But the guaranteed loans, man, I can't think of a better public-private partnership, right? Allows us to back those loans that you guys are making, maybe give that producer a little bit more favorable terms, make it a little bit more affordable to get them, whether it's going or keep them in business or help them through whatever situation they've got going on. It's just a really nice compliment, and we are so fortunate, and I feel like we are very, very fortunate in Iowa. We've had great leadership within the banking industry as well as here at FSA to build a really strong partnership. It's not always the case in all the states. I talk to all 50 of my counterparts, obviously, and there are different guaranteed lending relationships out there. But I think, you know, I think in Iowa, we have over 300 guaranteed lenders. Most of them are small regional community banks, which helps that footprint in our rural communities, helps support the financial stability of the rural community, of our farmers, and at the benefit of not only the taxpayer, of the producer as well.
So I got a question for you. We got all different types of farmer listeners, from guys that are $10 million operators to guys that want to start. So when I started, my wife and I were able to get the beginning farmer loan. And so we got that, and there was oversight, and they checked our plan and they checked our equipment to make sure we didn't sell it, and checked our cattle and et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera, to make sure. So there was some oversight there, to make sure that we didn't fail. Okay. And so I like that, but I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a second. I'm going to say all the naysayers that say, oh, you guys are just getting a check, or all you farmers get a deal. You always get a tax advantage. You always get something out there. What does, and I'm sure you've heard that from the people that are not farmers, maybe joining our podcast, and when they're out there, what do you say to them when they say, well, I started my own business and I didn't get any help, but it seems like every farmer gets help one way or another. It feels like the government's giving them special treatment. Is there any truth to that? Or is it something we need as the USA? I mean, do we need that? Do we need to support our farmers in that aspect?
So personally, I'm going to put on my just personal farming rural community hat right now. I don't know if COVID has taught. I hope if we've learned anything from COVID, we've learned how fragile our rural communities are. And, you know, when this started, it seemed like it's a big city problem, right? It's a New York City and a Seattle problem. But clearly we have had, there's been a long tail to this. And, you know, I just reading this morning and listening on my drive in to work, that one of the small restaurants in Colo, is going to be permanently closing their doors in August. The people just bought it a year ago, March. So to me, one of the things that makes Iowa so unique, and such a desirable place to live and to work and to raise a family and to farm is that we have this great fabric in our rural communities, we just have this wonderful way of life. And I think, you know, as an Iowan, I want to maintain that way of life. I think a lot of people in Des Moines want to maintain that way of life. They want clean water and they want beautiful state parks and they want a thriving Iowa agriculture, because that in turn supports all of the businesses in our state. Think about how many businesses in our state rely on maybe not the farmer directly, but rely on the industries that the farm community supports, you know, insurance and transportation and manufacturing.
I think Iowa State
is so interwoven into our communities. It's unbelievable. So to me, farmers are such an integral piece of our fabric. And just like our rural communities, their number is dwindling. And anything that we can do to continue to support new and beginning farmers and growth in agriculture, in my opinion, is the right thing to do.
So we've been very fortunate here on the podcast to have some great growth lately, and it pushes outside of our state boundaries. And I think it's important, no matter the state, we're very fortunate to be in Iowa. I wouldn't live anywhere else. But to you as a listener outside of the state, that's something too that you need to realize is an integral part of your communities, and making sure that you have the right connections with the people in power to make sure that it stays that way. So Amanda, though, if I want to learn more, or I want to learn more about agriculture, or I want to learn more about what's evolving, does the FSA office offer trainings or programs or type of outreach structure that can help me kind of get continuing education?
All the time. It's kind of in our middle. It's kind of, you know, our middle name is service, but we look at that as an extension of outreach too. We partner certainly with Extension all the time. We're obviously doing outreach in a new way right now. Most of what we're doing is through webinars, through mailings, and that sort of thing. The old way is kind of on pause. I hope that's not permanent. But certainly, you know, we're at trade shows. We're at community and industry meetings. Even if we're not presenting, you know, I always encourage my staff, go to that Rotary meeting, go to the cattlemen's meeting. Just even if you're just in the background, be there as a resource so people can ask questions. A lot of our counties do, I sort of call them small group meetings. So I'll give you a perfect example. We didn't talk about this as a disaster program, but when we have flooding, and we had flooding just last year, which is hard to believe because now we're talking about drought. But when we had flooding in Western Iowa last year, about five counties along the Missouri River, we did emergency conservation program work. That's where we can come in and fix, help pay cost share to fix, you know, blown out terraces or major washouts or rebuild fences and that kind of thing. And some of our counties down there, instead of trying to, and we did some of this too, go to a big meeting with 70 farmers, our county directors down there would bring in maybe 10 farmers at a time or 12 farmers at a time into the office, because that's about all we can accommodate in our little conference rooms, and sit them around and say, okay, here are the rules. We think most of you have fencing that you're going to need done. Here's the application. We're going to walk you all together kind of through how you fill out the application. So you can take it home and work on it if you want, but you can also stay here and do it. So we do all sorts of different creative things to try to not only educate our producers about the programs, but also educate them about how to fill out the forms, because We are the government. Sometimes the forms aren't the easiest. And if we can help you walk you through it, we are happy to do that. So
that's probably my least favorite part of working on government guaranteed loans or beginning farmer packages is the amount of paperwork. So I would second that. Any help and assistance you guys can provide is well received.
So Amanda, as we move along here, what's something that you'd like to share with our listeners that maybe they don't know about the FSA office, other than the fact that you have 50 programs? Because I just learned that today. So what's something else that we don't know? What is something special?
Yeah. So most Iowans they might know this, but we have 97 offices. We're probably one of the most dense states for offices. And that's just due to the number of farmers that we have compared to other states. But most producers, we have some great, you know, GPS and GIS technology. Most producers don't have to go more than about 25 to 35 minutes to get to an FSA office. We also have text. We also have text messages that they can get from their local CO. And I know some people don't like to give out their cell phone numbers or they feel like they're going to be bombarded with text messages. We don't. I want to just assure listeners that we don't do that. What we use it for, and a lot of producers like it, is we send it out. We send out texts to remind you of deadlines. So some farmers, you know, and this is not derogatory anyway, but some farmers like to wait until the last day. But unfortunately, lots of people like to wait until the last day, and so that's not always a great strategy. So we try to send out some text reminders a couple weeks in advance, like, you know, hey, the CFAB deadline's coming up if you haven't been in. So they can sign up for text alerts by just texting your our state IA and your county. So if you're Adair, IA Adair, to FSA Now and get signed up. It's a great way to keep up. And then maybe the last thing I'd say is we are doing more and more things virtually. That's certainly COVID has pushed us to do that. We are modernizing our technology at FSA, which, man, long, long overdue. And so certainly in loans and with some of our other programs, we now have the ability to do a lot more with electronic signature. You know, especially for farm managers, I think this is going to be a great tool for them. Instead of coming down and maybe to the office and having to wait for a little while and then sitting there and signing for 40 minutes on a variety of different farms that they manage, we can email that stuff to them. They can do it at their convenience from their office. So, you know, we are modernizing the way we do things. There's tons of information on farmers.gov. It's our brand new website. Way more friendly, way more interactive than maybe our old website was. So I encourage people to go down, take a look. We've got payment calculators on there, which are a great tool. CFAP, that was a great example. We never had a payment calculator for some of our programs. CFAP, a producer could go right on to the payment calculator on farmers.gov, put in their number of head, put in the bushels of head in the bin, and it estimated their payment right there for them, and they could click print, turn it into an application and mail it in. It was as slick as anything that we've ever had or done. So we're getting there with technology. Maybe not as fast as the private sector, but we are getting there.
Holy smokes. So I did my best to write down everything you just said so the listener can find us in the show notes. So I'll have that website. I'll have the text FSA Now number. I will have that information in the show notes, guys, so you don't have to hit rewind and re-listen to what Amanda just said. But that is fantastic. My head's spinning. I didn't know that there was this much going on through the FSA office just in general. I know there's a lot of partnerships, a lot of things that are conjoined, and I'm excited to encourage our listeners during the challenge to go out there and find some more too. But what we like to do, Amanda, at the end of each one of our conversations is challenge our listener to provide us with the most common characteristic of the successful farmers that you've networked with. If you would be able to think about that and share that after we challenge our listeners, we would appreciate that. I look forward to your unique perspective of being a government official and an active farmer as to the type of answer that you have. But Dave, why don't you summarize what we talked about today?
You bet. I'm going to do my best here. Thanks again, Amanda, for joining us. So listeners, kind of what we covered to start with was what types of services FSA provide. And we learned that the overall sentiment for it is there a financial safety net for you as a farmer from disaster recovery programs, farm loans, price commodities support. We went into how can they help increase your profit? They're not necessarily to help you increase your profit. profit and get a paycheck in that mailbox, but they are to support you as a safety net, again, whether it's flooding or something else of that nature. We talked about the CFAF, the program that's out there now for since COVID. We talked about the MFP payments and how they went directly from that, and basically how your government's working for you to make sure that they are the safety net for you. We talked about loans, Tanner. We talked about the fact that there are specialty loans. If you're a specialty demographic, women, racial, ethnicity, minorities, if you're a starting farmer, there's emergency loans, there's guaranteed loans, microloans. The fact that they work in the public and private sector together. And so you as a public banker and them as a government agency, that they are going to work together to do that. That's pretty awesome. We talked about outreach today. So they can do outreach programs and more digitally, which is awesome. But here's what I got from it. Here's what I got from it. Maybe this is the challenge. It might just allude right to the challenge. Is when she told me there's 50 programs, and I went, I thought I knew what I was talking about, but maybe I don't. I'm guessing some of our listeners are saying the same thing. I asked, how am I supposed to know about these 50 programs? Am I supposed to go Google search it? Like, where do I find this? And the comment she said that I'm going to reiterate here is the best is, sometimes you just got to go tell your trusted advisor
right
at the FSA office what your operation is. They know the programs and they're going to say, oh, you do bees? Hey, we have a program for you. This could help. So we don't expect you as the farmer to know all 50 programs. That's their job. Your job is to make sure that you effectively communicate to them what you're doing, and they're going to find a way to help you.
I think I'm going to mold my challenge a little bit to include that, Dave. I think, you know, going back to those interviews that we have had with these prior guests, stating that they either got referrals from, connections to, or things that benefited their operation just from that conversation with the FSA office and the person that's in their CO, I think that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to challenge you next time that you stop by the FSA office, whether you're, you know, we're probably going to be past certifying acres when this comes through. Maybe you're going to certify yield, whichever your next stop in there is. And hopefully the next time you stop in, you can actually go in the office, and we're past this pandemic, to talk to them, have a conversation, learn more about each other. They don't have to just know more about you. Make them feel like a person as well, the officer that you're working with. So I would challenge you to get into that type of a discussion and see if there is a program that you can learn about that might benefit your farm. So that's what I've got. Now, Amanda, we gave you a little bit of time to think here. What is common amongst the most successful farmers that you know?
So, you know, I would have to say, overall, people who approach their operation like a business, like the business it is, frankly. Sometimes there is a tendency to, I don't know if it's be resistant to change. I think that's ingrained in our human nature, right? Well, this is the way, I think you even said it earlier in referring to us, right? Oh, I have to go to FSA because that's what dad always did, or dad told me to go, right? Be open to the change that may increase your profitability. So looking at the data and the numbers, you know, technology works. Technology is wonderful, and we have rapid technology adoption, but make sure that technology can pay for itself, right? Don't just chase the technology because it's the newest technology. You have to figure out, I think, what is best for your, where the ROI is, and where the data and those numbers line up. I think COVID has certainly taught me that having good plans, and that can be an operational plan. I've known a bunch of farmers now who've had COVID and have been knocked out of their operation for a month or more because they've been hospitalized. What's the backup plan operationally? Who is doing the chores if you are a sole proprietor in that kind of situation? Having a good risk management plan, you know, having a good financial plan, you know, people who rely, people who focus and make decisions based on what the data and the numbers say, historically, I have found to be the most successful.
Oh, very good. That is. I agree. That's why we put Farm for Profit together, is to help farmers achieve higher levels of profitability by running their farm more like a business. In the business sector, that's exactly what they do. You got to run it, otherwise you won't have it. So thank you again, Amanda, for joining us. We really appreciate you taking the time out of your day. And you too, listener, thanking you for spending your precious time and minutes with us. Remember, if you like this message, please publicly let us know, share it with your family and friends, leave us a review. And if you got a topic suggestion going forward, just like this one, please send us an email, farmforprofitllc@gmail.com. And we'll talk to you next time.
Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long.
And that's it. Thanks, Amanda. Appreciate it.
What'd you think?
Thank you. You're right. 40 minutes flew by.
46 to be precise.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're good.